everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Webtoon Wednesday episode, and I'm here with creator M. Nyer, who has a strip on Webtoon called Unlucky Is As Lucky Does. We're going to be talking about that strip, but first I want to welcome M. Nyer to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so I always like to ask people when they come on for the first time sort of about their background. So what's your history with comics? Did you grow up reading them? Were they always a part of your life? Did you discover them later? What's your secret origin in that respect?
Okay, so when I grew up a lot with Pokemon mostly, I think, just watching the movies and TV series. I didn't have a whole lot of, a lot of manga growing up, but I watched Pokemon, Sailor Moon, but I honestly don't remember a lot of it. That one particularly, but like the style is really what got me mostly. And getting older, I got really into Avatar the Last Airbender. That was like a big inspiration. And for comics, well, I also watched a bit of Justice League. So, but getting older, I was really into like Yotsuba and more like sports manga, like Whistle, I think, and another one about board games called Hikaru no Go. Kind of like maybe unpopular, obscure comics or anything, but yeah, those were, I think I was driven to more of the comedy of, obviously, of like the gags kind of manga versus Western style gags. So I think that was really a big inspiration for me when I was growing up that got me really into just reading and stuff like that. So yeah.
At what point did you start thinking, well, maybe I want to tell my own story, I want to create my own comics? What was that kind of decision process like?
I kind of was always drawing growing up. I have like four sisters, so, and we were always drawing, so it was kind of like a thing. And actually when we were younger, we would do this game called, like, we just would draw a story where everyone would draw a character on a piece of paper, and they would just draw multiple characters, and they'd be doing something, and then it'd take a bunch of pieces of paper, and eventually it'd be like a, like, kind of wacky story. Mm-hmm. So it was like, I think a lot of times, like, when I was younger, didn't finish comics, but I did lots of beginnings of things. But I was always drawing. I think I was more into, I thought when I was younger, I thought more of being like a painter or something like that. But when I got older, I just like really liked like comedy and comics and stuff. And so that's what made me kind of get drawn to like creating webtoons and things. So yeah.
And is this strip your first work, or have you done previous work that was published either in print or on Webtoon?
I had I don't think it was the first Webtoons contest. It might have been the second one. There was a contest that was, I think it was like sci-fi or something like that. And I entered one. It was like, I think I was on the first year of, I started art college, but I was in art club. I was in there for like a semester before I moved on to like graphic design. But when I first got in, I was thinking, I wonder if they have any contests for comics. And so I searched online and I randomly found Webtoons. And so I created this comic called Skyron, which was about this kind of like sci-fi futuristic thing about this kid who was like genetically created and whatever. And it was, it was something that made me realize a lot of things. Like, first of all, it was more serious. I really couldn't be serious. I couldn't stay serious for very long. So I kept adding in jokes, and even though it was supposed to focus more on like the environment and stuff like that. But and also just the style in which I did it, and not knowing very much about web making comics online or anything, like the digital part of it, was like a very big learning experience that kind of developed how Unlucky Is As Lucky Does was created.
So when you did the search for that contest and found Webtoon, was that your first exposure to the platform?
Yeah. It was after that, I kind of kept going with Staron for a few chapters before I got just like left it. And then that's when I started like thinking, this is really cool, this website. Like, they're doing a lot of stuff, this Webtoon, and I'd really like to be part of it. So that's where I always started working on Unlucky As Lucky Does.
Yeah.
And that was back, I think, in 2016 when I started Unlucky As Lucky Does.
Yeah, we'll get into more of that in a second, kind of the mental process of the current strip you have. But I wanted to give you a chance, for any of our listeners who aren't familiar with Unlucky, what's the story about?
It's a story about, like, it's comedy, fantasy, and it's about, it's set in this kingdom where this king has someone tries to kidnap his daughter. Who's really little, she's only 7 years old. And so he gets freaked out and he wants to send her away because the fortune teller says stuff. And so he winds up getting someone to be the bodyguard for his daughter when he sends them off so he can find whoever is responsible. But the only thing is that the daughter, which is Mookie, she's like the strongest person in the entire kingdom. And she's her bodyguard, quote unquote, is not that strong at all. He's just lucky. And so it kind of follows their kind of adventure as they go off while there's like secret plots of what's really happening and stuff like that. So kind of like mostly jokes, but also a bit of plot.
And you mentioned working on this for a few years. So before you started Skyron, did you already have the kind of the kernel, the idea for Unlucky Is As Lucky Does, or did it kind of develop as you were working on the Webtoon platform? Like, where did the story start in your mind?
The story was, it was kind of really, it developed out of everything that went wrong with Skyron. Like, I think I was on like the seventh or something, or maybe it was way less than that, maybe it was the fourth chapter or something. I was going through school, and so I only had so much time. Everything was bugging me about it. Like, doing the shadows and doing the lines, because the lines are really thin, and just the story, you know. And I was like, this isn't working. I need to figure out what I could actually stick with. Like, if I had to do a story and I had to do it every, like, I think at the time they had it like twice a month you had to update so you can get all the benefits and whatever. So I tried to figure out, like, so I researched, I went on like looking at different web comics online to see how they were doing their art and what was like efficient and what would look complete with a minimum amount of effort. So for the background, I was like, what do I really not like drawing? I really don't like drawing buildings and lines that are straight. So I did like, but I like trees and stuff, so fantasy would work. And also for backgrounds, what makes them look finished, really like simple, but it could look finished, was like texture. So like noise, some people just do it with noise and whatever. I thought like watercolor, because you can make it look pretty sloppy, but it still looks like finished and complete. So that was that. And then mostly for like the art for the characters, it was like, I really didn't like doing shadows on like every panel, so I did the line color because it made it look complete. And then for the characters, I think I had a story that they were kind of developed afterwards. The story that I thought of before was more of a superhero thing, but it was for a superhero contest. I was like, nah, that's not gonna work. The next one, I was like, I took the characters and I kind of thought, like, so for the characters, it was this early idea that was about knights and stuff. And I thought, I just want a comic about the princess that's always, like, rescuing everybody else. Like, way too strong. Definitely not the knights and whatever that are rescuing her or whatever, so. And it was the most important thing I had to do was, like, I really like to do comedy, so this is going to be comedy and the craziest comedy that, like, I could just do whatever I want. It's going to be, like, really wacky. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. So you, I mean, I've never heard of somebody creating a comic that way or story that way, and I think it speaks to your abilities as a creator. So, you basically created a strip that wasn't necessarily in line with your sensibilities, still quality strip, and so, you're still giving your all, but you kind of did it backwards, right? You discovered all the things that you didn't enjoy creating, and so you almost reverse engineered Unlucky Is as Lucky Does by going the other way first.
Yeah.
Have you talked to other creators and talked about the origins? Has anyone else kind of expressed a surprise at the way you kind of backed into this strip?
I haven't really talked to many people about it, but I think it's, it was probably because when I was going through college, and it was like a pipe dream. It was like, I wasn't going to get into comics. And I was like, if I graduate in the end and I get the job, then I get the job. If I don't, then I don't. So I was like, I have to stick with it. So that was really what it was all about.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see if you hear from any fans or any other creators that listen to this podcast about kind of the origins of it and sort of how unique it is. Mm-hmm. It's so different from anything I've ever really heard before in terms of how to go about creating a strip. Just really, really interesting in that way. Why don't you go ahead and give us a rundown of the main characters? You mentioned the princess and her bodyguard. And again, when you talk about luck as sort of a way to protect someone, I find that to be a pretty interesting idea. And we'll talk about that more when we talk about kind of themes and ideas of the story. But who are the main characters in the story? Give us sort of a rundown.
Mm-hmm. So the main characters are Mookie, which is the princess, and she's 7 years old, and she's got giant strength, so she's like the strongest person in the entire kingdom. And she's just kind of evil. She's not that sweet, nice 7 year old. And like most of the people in the kingdom are kind of like that. But Hepney, he's 14 years old, and he's the lucky kid, and he kind of randomly, his luck is, it's not necessarily always the luckiest. Like, there's definitely people that are luckier than him, but he just happens to, because he's not super lucky, he gets the job. So his luck is, it's something that gets him in trouble a lot, like, he gets injured a lot and things like that, but he doesn't die, you know? And he's more of the good character of everyone. He's like got the least faults probably. So, and then there's the king, who's like a really bad guy too. And he's just, but he loves his daughter. Like he's super obsessed with her. He just wants her to be protected and stuff. And then his wife, who's always trying to kill him once in a while. And then there's the knight, who is like the person in the shadows and you don't know what they're up to. And then, of course, there's the tour guide who travels with them, the road tour guide, and he's kind of geography. He is really, like, he's obsessed with the kingdom and stuff, and you'll see it more later on how much he just likes maps or whatever, and he's the king's favorite, probably, and he's brought with him to bring them to the other kingdom where, and then, of course, they meet up with various other characters who will help them along, and various other characters who are not going to help them along, villains and such. And there's just a lot of random characters too.
Yeah, it's a diverse cast for sure. But what I do like about it is you get an idea right away as you meet characters, like within the first few panels of each character sort of appearing in the strip. You already have a pretty good handle on who they are. You do a real good job of kind of relating that through both visuals and over exaggerations and a lot of, you know, emotive scenes and dialogue as well. And yeah, it's one of those fun sort of cartoony strips where not everybody has, like, you know, all these different multi facets to their personality. You kind of get an idea right away of sort of, you know, who they are, and it makes for a quick and enjoyable read. And being that the characters are that way, you know, it grounds it very well in sort of this fantasy world that you're talking about, and sort of kind of a more fun strip. It's not one that you have to necessarily put a lot of thought into in terms of character motivations and things like that. It's much more enjoyable than that and kind of simpler than that. But I wonder, going that direction with the characters, and then also the fact that, you know, how we talked about, you came up with the idea for the strip, you probably didn't necessarily say, well, there's this theme or this idea that I'd like to explore when you were planning it out. But now that you've kind of got your feet under you and you've had quite a few strips, episodes of the strip come out, are you starting to see that there are some ideas that you sort of maybe subconsciously put into the narrative that you're looking to explore? Because I kind of spotted a few as I was reading through that seem to be kind of, they're subtle, but they're there and they kind of run throughout the strip.
So do you mean like the moral of the story, or like the plot, extra plot besides the comedy?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both, right? Like there's obviously familial relationships that you're kind of poking fun out with, you know, the way the queen's always trying to kill the king. And there's, you know, the relationship between the king and the princess. There's the way the princess sees everything. But there's also, you know, maybe the biggest idea or theme that I kind of got out of it was this idea of, you know, this luck, right? That, and you were talking about how just because you're lucky doesn't mean you don't get hurt or everything, you know, just goes perfectly for you and your life is perfect. It's a little more subtle than that, but also this idea of kind of being fated or destined to do something, right? Like, in a way, I kind of think that's what luck is, in a way. Like, no matter what path you choose, because you're lucky, it's going to steer you back kind of toward the right path. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's definitely that. It's like, when you, if you look carefully, there are, everything that happens to Hepney happens because he's avoiding probably imminent death. Like, becoming the bodyguard of the princess isn't really lucky. He conveniently gets his own bodyguard from being the princess's bodyguard to keep other people from killing him and whatever. So, and also, like, there are lots of things that I, like, ideas that I wanted to get across. Like, how the princess would, she'd probably become a pretty bad person if she just grew up with her parents being the only influence she has. So, winding up with Hepney being kind of like her new, a new influence to make her a better person a little bit. And I wanted to, when I created the king and the queen, I wanted to show what probably arranged marriage would really be like a really bad, like two people who really don't like each other. So, and I'm pretty good for the further it goes, because even though when I first started the comic, before it got picked up, it was all, the plot was all over the place. There was a lot of stuff. There were things like, there was magic and stuff like that. People were wizards and stuff, but I cut that all out because it was too complicated. But there's still lots of parts in the plot that are, like, exciting things to get to, because it'll get deeper and deeper. My idea for the comic was mostly, like, I want it to be super funny, but have a plot so that people will be like, oh my god, I need to know how to fix. So.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, like you mentioned, obviously there's a lot of humor that runs through it, you know, humorous situations, you know, with Hefni, with the king, with the queen constantly trying to kill him. So, you know, you'd never lose sight of that, even though, I like I said, there are these ideas that you seem to want to explore. And I mentioned one already, that father-daughter dynamic, you know, and you mentioned that the parents being sort of the strongest person and maybe not having the best influences early on in her life. And you can see how that's kind of made her a little bit abrasive, is the word that I'll use. You know, she's not, you know, really outwardly kind. And we can kind of maybe see Hefni being a good influence on her in that way. But what I wanted to ask about the father-daughter dynamic is kind of how do you enjoy exploring that, and kind of what are you drawing on from like personal experience or your own life to kind of flesh that out? And, you know, what do you hope to explore in that relationship?
Yeah. I think what I wanted to, like, the king's character is he's pretty sexist, and he has like a certain idea about how, obviously, about how he views women and stuff like that. And the interesting thing was, like, I don't know how far the comic will go into his background, but what has shaped this into his way of thinking, because it's not necessarily the kingdom's views. It's more like his personal views based on experience. But it was just to be how he treats his daughter, because he loves his daughter, but he still has these views. And he still thinks that, obviously, one of the chapters that touches on this a little bit, that he overprotects his daughter because he has these ideas about how women are and how he sees them separately. And I think, but it's funny because he acknowledges how strong she is, because she's obviously the strongest, but he also holds this idea about how extremely weak she is, almost. And that was something that I wanted to kind of explore. And also, just, I think that, like, family relationships are really fun to work with, because they can, because there is this like amount of history. Like, when you work with a character that shows up and they meet each other, they're that's where their history starts. But when you have a character that's from a family dynamic or whatever, you get to think about how that happened, how they act that way, and how they'll develop afterwards. And it's more, I think, also there's the closeness of rudely close, because you're rude because you're so close. But I think also the humor is because it's a very, like, my own family, we're very close, and we have this kind of almost like a very sarcastic humor, and so that kind of shows up a lot. But yeah, I think I'm going off tangent with this one.
Oh, it's good. I totally get what you're saying. I mean, you're getting a chance to kind of explore this dynamic in from a generational perspective, right? I mean, it's kind of, you can think about it as the way we're all, if you have children, that we're all sort of immortal, right? Like, you keep passing on your ideas and your values to your children, and then they pass them on to their children and their children and their children. But you're right, when a character comes on board, when they're born and their story starts, so to speak, at that moment, you know, that is where their story starts. But in relation to their parent, really, their story goes back further, even before their birth, because their parent is going to influence them. And clearly there were things that influenced their parents. So just like you're talking about with the king, you know, there's reasons why he has these sexist views, which then, you know, those views affect the princess. But she wasn't around for whatever events caused those views to exist and to eventually, in, you know, impact her life. But yet, even though she wasn't alive or even conceived at that moment, in a way, it's still part of her story, because it's part of the impact that her father's views are having on her and the way they're shaping her. So it's a really interesting way to look at storytelling and sort of familial storytelling in particular.
Exactly.
Now, we saw early on in the stories that when the king was looking for the bodyguard, you know, the fortune teller had said, well, you need to get her, you know, not the strongest or the bravest or, you know, the best fighter or whoever, you know, whatever normal yardstick you would use to find a bodyguard, but rather you need to find her the luckiest person in the kingdom. And so the king sent his men out to find the luckiest person, and there were several different candidates, and they were all interesting and quirky and funny in their own way. Are we going to see some of them show back up throughout the strip? Maybe will we meet even some other luckies? I mean, the idea, I mean, it's right there in the title, right? Luck is such a big part of the story in the strip that you're telling. So should we expect to see some of those characters return, or even new lucky people?
I think there's nothing like that's not totally in stone, but there's no denying that they might show up again. I think but the main part is there won't be anyone just like Lady May. There won't be anyone so lucky that they'll actually show up at all, because there's just misfortune following this cast.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, let's shift gears here. I want to move on from talking about the story itself to kind of get into the behind the scenes, the nuts and bolts. Take us through your process for how you create an episode for the strip.
Mm-hmm. So I don't do scripts. I start off, well, they're kind of scripts, but they're picture scripts. I don't do the word script stuff. So I start off with, I take a
thumbnail,
just a normal sheet of paper. Mm-hmm. I don't do it digitally at first. I start off just with a sheet of paper and then just put little squares, and then they go horizontally. Like, I don't know why I have to do this, but this is the only way that I can get the ideas out. But that's how I started off. And then I bring it over to the horizontal reading version online. I work on both Photoshop and Clip Studio. I think because I'm used to Photoshop, I'm still using it. I haven't gotten completely, and because I use brushes that are watercolor brushes that are particular in Photoshop. But I go back and forth. I do the inks on Clip Studio because the inks are really nice there. And right now I do everything else on Photoshop, and I have a color that does the flat colors. And then I'll send them to her, and she'll send them back to me, and then I just kind of, I'll have them on like kind of messy files, and then I'll copy paste the image onto a long end sheet, and that's what the final product will be, where they'll have the bubbles and the words and all the extra stuff, the blur. Sometimes I'll put blur just to make it more realistic, because your eye doesn't always actually in reality see everything clear, so when you add the little blur on the corners, it gives this extra depth, I guess.
Now, at what
point, that's like a very simple form.
At what point do you put in the dialogue once you've got it to the horizontal?
The very end.
Oh, so after it's colored and everything.
Yeah.
So you're go ahead.
Sorry. When I was first publishing it, I was doing it in page format, like if I was going to print it. And so I did do the bubbles. I included those into the panel, but then afterwards my editor was like, it's good to get onto the scroll thing. So I eventually got onto the scroll. And so I work a lot differently than I first started when I first started doing it.
Yeah. So when you're thinking about the story, the chunk of the story that you want to tell in a particular strip, you know, from a storytelling perspective, you're really telling the story visually, right? Like it's got to really flow from panel to panel as you're scrolling. And then, I mean, do you even have an idea of necessarily what the dialogue's going to be as you're illustrating it? Or are you going back and almost interpreting what you drew and just kind of filling in just the minimum amount of dialogue that's necessary at that point?
I have I think it's not always like really clear, but I have like the idea of what they're saying and sometimes exactly what they're saying on the original sheet that I'll have in little, they're kind of like, they're not so small that they don't have words, but they're, sometimes I simplify it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times the dialogue isn't like the most important thing all the time. Sometimes I switch it around a lot at the end if it doesn't like flow. Cause I'm not super writer-y. You could say I'm more, English is my only language, but it's not the greatest language. I'm not the greatest at it, but eventually it'll get to like, I'll find the words at least in the serious parts, like the words that best fits the flow and what's going on. But most of the time, especially when it's just snappy dialogue, like the jokes and stuff, I'll just already have that down and stuff. So,
yeah, that's what the part that's really cool to me, because I, you know, obviously you know your proclivities are, when it comes to storytelling, are visual. You know, you're a visual storyteller first, and you know, using dialogue and scripting second, which is, you know, perfectly legitimate. But the fact that you then can go back into what you've drawn to tell the story, to tell us the chunk of the story that we get in that episode of the strip, then you're able to go back and put in some of those witty, you know, the banter back and forth and just, you know, the little jokes and such. It's done really, really well.
Thank you.
And I was going to ask you about kind of how you developed the style, but you kind of talked about that earlier, how you were just trying to find what would work for you and with the restrictions you were putting on yourself in terms of time and making sure you still got to, you know, express what you wanted to say and get the story across and, you know, what you wanted to draw, what you like to draw, not buildings, not straight lines or everything. So I don't know that we necessarily need to get into that, but I do want to ask you, when you look back, now that you've kind of been doing this for a while, once you decided to move on from Skyron and really kind of tell a story that more suited your sensibilities, you know, funnier and visually more appealing to what you wanted to do, at that point, what's the biggest challenge you face once you kind of made those decisions and said, okay, I'm not doing Skyron anymore, I'm doing Unlucky Is As Lucky Does? What have you found to be, and maybe it's more than one thing, the biggest challenges that you've had to kind of deal with?
Mm-hmm. I think at least now that I'm publishing regularly, posting regularly, I always try to, as best I can, make jokes as funny, like laugh out loud by actually laughing out loud. Like that's my goal, to get people who are reading to laugh out loud and not be able to help it. But it's not always easy to be that funny or to try and be that funny. Sometimes you, like, I think even more than the plot sometimes, because I mean, a lot of times plot holes are another difficult thing, like making sure that the story going on makes sense. Because there was so much that was cut out of the original story, like it went off, it probably went on forever, but I had to cut a lot and change a lot of things that would end the story. But just like sometimes I had a few of the recent chapters that I storyboarded them over and over again because I was like, no, this isn't funny enough. This isn't funny enough. This isn't funny at all. And then sometimes you wonder if you're actually funny at all. You're like, well, I don't know. This is probably not funny. And then you doubt yourself. And then you're like, no, I'm not a funny person. And then you go, and then once, but then you hear some comments or someone reads it and they laugh. And you're like, okay, maybe I am. But making jokes and like evolving jokes, like, because if you do the same joke over and over again or the same like format of a joke, or like just the same format or feeling of a joke too much, it won't be funny anymore. So you have to kind of say, well, that worked, now I have to do something else. And then it's a lot of thinking. So I think probably just being funny is the most difficult part.
Yeah, I have heard that writing humor is tough, because like you said, it can get stale if you start repeating yourself too much. So yeah, I can imagine. I mean, I don't think I'm a funny person at all, so I can't imagine how challenging that is. When we start talking about Webtoon in terms of a platform, what is it that you like about Webtoon as a kind of a digital delivery system? What do you like best?
Yeah, I really like the, like, I started off on different, I looked when I was going to post the first chapters online, I looked through different platforms too. And I think Webtoon, it was really, it felt really friendly and it was really well formatted, I thought. And it just felt, I think the community was really nice. Like, I got a lot more engagement when I posted on there, and people were kind of followed you through and stuff like that, followed you through the comic. And I think just the idea of free comics that you don't have to pay for, that you can pay for the newer ones, but you still have them available for free, is just like a really, it's a really great idea because it's online and people are not as willing to pay online. But I think just the diversity and the amount of comics that are on there. And I think it was, when I first saw this, I just thought that this is the future. This is the future of comics. That's what I thought. So.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I love the fact that they get to provide this great content for free. And then what's even better is the fact that despite the fact that they're providing it for free, they're still paying creators a very legitimate page rate when compared to, a lot of other digital platforms where, maybe you have to monetize it yourself, or, you're making a fraction of what you'd make if you were in, the traditional publishing side of comics, working for Marvel or DC or, your own title at Image or what have you. So it's a really, really great model. You did mention the kind of the community and how kind everybody seems to be and really sort of encourage creators to interact just by being polite, which we could all use a little more of. But I wonder, have you had any fan interactions that stand out in your mind that are memorable?
I think when I didn't have a huge following when I first started. I just had like way less than like some creators on there. They'll have like pretty big following. I had first pretty steady amount until Webtoon started posting. They posted on the front page once, I think, and then a couple times on the Discover page. But it was just, I really liked interacting with the very few commenters, and so it was kind of fun. I think at one point I did this little, like, they had so many like fun comments and stuff. Like at one point I did a commenting awards where I just picked a bunch of them, and then I was like, "Here's the awards," and I was like, "Oh, look, it's my comments and stuff like that." It was super fun.
Yeah, it's one of the things that is unique to Webtoon, right? That the fact that fan community is there, it can feel very intimate, and it's instant feedback, right? A lot of times they're waiting for the new episode to come out. They're highly anticipating it, and they also want the prestige of being the first one to comment.
Yeah, it gets pretty rough.
They definitely get kind of cutthroat about that. You also mentioned one of the things earlier about the vertical scroll and how you sort of have to work in a more traditional layout on paper first. So do you feel like the creative scroll from that standpoint is a benefit? Or do you think it's more a challenge? Like, where do you stand on it now that you've been dealing with it for a little bit?
Well, and I think when I was really hesitant at first to try to kind of follow the scroll, make it more big panels and whatever. Especially because I wasn't reading on the phone at all. I was working on my computer, so I was reading at the computer, and so it looked like the fonts and everything looked good enough. And so I was, and I didn't really like the when the square was cut off, if you had the color bleed off the edge and stuff. So I was like, just for taste, I wasn't really all for it. I was hesitant at first, but I've been doing it for a while now, and so it's kind of more. It's easier actually, but it's also, even though I haven't done a lot of, like, there's some artists that do like really elaborate scroll downs that are like really creative and stuff. Like, I haven't done anything like that yet, but I think even though if you wanted to do like a horizontal look, you'd have to flip it completely sideways. And sometimes if you don't like that, you kind of lose that, but you still have the diagonal opportunities out there. And I think I've been slowly doing some longer scrolling panels that with like changes in perspective, like from, and that's just been kind of fun. So I think I'm liking it more and more.
Yeah, and it's also one of those things as a creator, right? You want to make sure you're always challenging yourself and trying to get better and trying new things. It's kind of like what we were talking about earlier with writing comedy and not using the same joke over and over because it'll get stale. You know, that can be something that happens to you from a visual standpoint as an artist as well, right? You can kind of start getting a bit repetitive if you don't continue to try to evolve your style, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's the one great thing about working as a, what they call it now, original creator, as an original comic creator of webtoons. You're creating so much at so little amount of time that, you're like learning every single panel, basically. Well, not every panel, maybe every episode. You're learning different things and I just love being able to try out new things and experiment, kind of. That's one of the funnest things to do because you have the opportunity to do, like, so you just, it's really just really great to do as the artist, to be able to have the opportunity to explore so much about comics, I guess, but just about art. So yeah.
Yeah, and then again, you know, going back to the fan community and that instant feedback, you know, you do get a chance to experiment and try things. And if it doesn't work, they'll let you know. I mean, they don't jump
down your throat. Yeah, definitely.
They don't jump down your throat like the, you know, like this isn't Twitter. But they'll let you know when something's not working.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I did want to ask if you had any advice for any other aspiring creators. I know there's a lot of people that listen to the podcast that are thinking about pulling the trigger on a webtoon strip. So what would you say to those people that are considering giving it a try?
Well, I think if you've learned anything from my experience is that your first web comic, you're like, I don't know, I don't want to do bad, or I don't want to be unpopular or whatever, but like your first webcomic should be you learning and having fun and trying to find out what you like about creating webcomics. And it doesn't have to be the one that you stick with. It just has to be getting out there and learning. And because people will not, they're not going to be necessarily mean, but they're going to help you with things, and you'll be able to learn different techniques and what you are more passionate about, what you're passionate about, and and you'll, because when you see anyone who starts any comic, the starting of the comic, it's always even the ones that you can see that it's the person's first comic and to the end, and you see the change in the style. It's always about, like, it's about, once you get started, you're going to learn, and you're going to change things, and things are going to look really different, but that's okay, because you can make the... Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's like, first of all, you've got to start in order to figure out what works for you and what doesn't. So, you know, start small and build from there.
Yeah, just have fun.
And have fun, yes. Very underrated aspect, especially under deadline. It's funny. I always like to say, no, you know, nobody gets into comics to get rich. You know, every comic creator I've ever met, they do it because they're passionate about telling stories. They're passionate about their art. So you got to remember that if you're passionate about it and you're doing it, it must be because you care about it a lot. So
yeah, and if you're feeling like I'm gonna try and get into this as a job, you want to make sure that the story that you're telling, everything about the story, is something that you love, because even the most popular comic artists, if they see like the negative comments, are always the worst, and they're like, doesn't matter how many nice comments there are, if you have that one bad comment, you're like, oh no. You're like, no, I think I have to rethink my life. But if you love what you're doing and you love the genre and you love the characters and you love the costumes or whatever, the art style and all that, it doesn't matter how many people like it, because you love it. And then you're like, well, I'm creating something that I would just love to read. So it makes it easier. It makes reading the bad comments easier.
Yeah, that's some good advice as well. So, again, really want to thank you for your time. Thanks for taking the time to join me. If anybody wants to follow along on social media to know when your work is coming out, interact with you, where's the best place online to follow you?
I have Twitter and a Instagram, and I also have Patreon, but nobody does that. I'm lonely over there.
All right, I'll put links to all three of M. Nyer's social media in the show notes, everybody. So go and give her a follow, check out her Patreon, check out her Twitter, her Instagram. You can find it all there in the show notes. So again, best of luck with Unlucky Is As Lucky Does. And again, thanks for joining me.
Thank you too.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.